broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Oh, you don't have to put your feet in. You can leave them out.
I can't for the life of me see why these kids would go into school.
How far do we allow our private employers to intrude?
Same thing everyone else here.
You are so dumb.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Every night, man, through the looking glass, we go places other talk shows cannot go. They wish they could. They wish they would. They wish they might. But they can't. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Truth is our bitch on this show. A foot fetish video allegedly starring Jets coach Rex Ryan and his wife leaks online. Now, of all the bizarre invasions of an individual's privacy, and that's what this is, but it's the internet, so the law is violated on a regular basis. People's privacy is violated on a regular basis. The security of a country is violated on a regular basis. Children are violated on a regular basis. Adults are violated. It's the internet. It's the Wild West. It's the Wild West. It is the Wild West prairie that has yet to be reined in or tamed by that man who shot Liberty Valance. You know, the guy walking into town with a star on his chest. We've yet to see who that individual is. It'll happen. But right now, it's Tombstone with the Clanton gang, and there's nobody around to stop them from riding into town on a Friday night, shooting the town up, raping the women, beating up the men, throwing bottles through windows, and then riding off. That's the internet right now. A Betty Ford staffer who confronted Lindsay Lohan gets canned, while Michael Lohan, who said he would not talk to the press again, and we all breathed a sigh of relief and we thanked our lucky stars and whatever deity we worship, he said he wouldn't talk to the press again. Well, he's talking to the press again. Jeff Dowder and Herb Sewell join us tonight, 877-876-PHIL, and our affiliate spotlight tonight on the great KFMB San Diego. Legacy call letters in San Diego, and we are proud to be a part of that radio station. WYDE 1260 in Birmingham, Alabama, another great station. And we thank all of the great radio stations on the Phil Hendry Radio Network. We're going to bring Professor Jeff Dowder on the line in a moment. He is a part of a business, an educator and business traveler group where called Contact. And their planned purpose is to restore constitutionality, as they put it, to the travel process. Traveling in this country, traveling internationally, in their opinion, has become a process where your rights are regularly violated. Now, in Washington, D.C., the Metro kicked off tighter security controls this week, beginning with randomized searches of riders' bags at two stations during the morning commute. This is the Washington, D.C., morning, the Washington, D.C. Rapid Transit, subway, loop, however you want to put it. The first screenings, typically running well into under a minute each, lasted for an hour. At the Green Line's College Park Station and Braddock Road stop on the Yellow Line. No explosives were found. There were no terrorist suspects arrested. Everything was good, according to Kathy Asato. She said it went off as intended. But the Metro started these searches 5 days after announcing the new policy, and the ACLU, the local branch of the American Civil Liberties Union, they are questioning the constitutionality of these searches. The D.C. Bill of Rights Coalition, the Montgomery County Civil Rights Coalition, they have posted an online petition saying the searches attack riders' civil liberties. And we're going to get your opinion on this as well as we talk to Jeff Dowder this evening. He's a professor of part-time mechanical physics professor at Caltech University. And Professor Dowder, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good, and appreciate you having us on this program tonight. And we do appreciate you giving a voice, you know, to this effort that we're making.
You are proposing something radical. Tell us what it is.
Thank you, Phil. What we're proposing basically is this. We're saying it's time to cease and desist all of these so-called security measures. It's time to completely lift the restriction on carrying bags or, you know, carrying on your personal effects. It's time to completely lift the restrictions on what we're wearing and how we're proceeding to our gate. These ridiculous processes and procedures that involve you know, taking off your shoes and having your person x-rayed, violating, you know, every single aspect of what it is to be a person, we feel it's time to cease with all of this and allow people to proceed to their mode of transportation without what we call an unconstitutional and continually unconstitutional harassment of individuals that are attempting to travel, Mr. Henry, and that's on every mode of transportation. You're just talking about the metro in Washington. We also believe that not only is it for aircraft and for long distances on trains, but also for these commuter trains. We are asking for, and in quite a point of fact, these searches have got to stop. They are a violation of the Constitution. They're a violation of our amendments, and they are, and they, as you know, they violate the dignity of people to the point where there have been physical confrontations.
All right, all right. I understand what you're saying here, Mr. Downer, and you're proposing that all security measures regarding travel be stopped.
That is correct. And
all right, so I can get this clear. You are proposing that there be no more metal detectors. There's no more...
Anything that was in place before anything that was in place before the attacks of the 9/11, we would be willing to discuss. But I have to tell you that even the you were about to say metal detector, even the even the very simple metal detector has proven to be something that turns into a long process of overeager TSA inspection. And whatever security may be there, they want to, exercise some sort of authority that they don't have, and it winds up slowing people up. We are saying that for all intents and purposes, yes, that all of these security measures have gone way overboard, and they have, you're taking your shoes off, and they're x-raying you and staring at you through your clothing. Things have gotten well out of hand, and now they're going through people's bags on a metro rail train? I don't think so. So we are saying, yes, that these security measures cease.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, because I got to ask you this question. You realize that this is inviting trouble?
Yes, sir. We do.
All right, because I saw your online statement. What are you proposing? Is there anything protecting us then, in your mind?
Look, the Constitution of the United States is very clear, and if that leaves us exposed on our travels on aircraft or train, then that's the way it's going to have to be. But the Constitution is very clear that we have a right to protect ourselves from an invasion of privacy. If it exposes us to attack, then our philosophy at Contact and other organizations that have joined us in this is simply that a terrorist attack is going to bring another crime scene and more opportunity for the collection of evidence. And quite frankly, that will probably hurry us, speed us along the path of solving these problems and not slowing us down.
And so you're very willing to expose people to terrorist attack.
No, I'm willing to get our constitutional rights back. That's what I'm willing to do. I'm willing to get the right that I have and you have to travel without a policeman or some other designated agent, going through my bag, going through my person, going through all of my personal facts. I'm willing speak up on behalf of the traveler.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, speaking up on behalf of the traveler and keeping them from going through this process means, quite frankly, that they're going to be exposed to the possibility of violence.
It could mean that. Yes, it could. It could mean that. It could very well mean that. It could also mean that nothing happens. That I don't think is the issue. And
why is that not the issue? Why is it not the issue that we could be exposed and attacked?
Because, Mr. Henry, to be perfectly honest with you, these ridiculous security measures, which have stripped us of the Constitution and everything, these have taken us further away from solving the problem of Al-Qaeda and these terrorists. If we had another terror attack, to be perfectly honest with you, it would be a, I hate to say this, but it would almost be a good thing, because we would be able to have the evidence.
Oh, that's right. So in other words, it's a good thing if you're not involved. It's a good thing if you're not on the plane.
Look, I'm not, understand that I travel a lot, and so what I'm proposing, I would expose myself to far more than the average person that's listening to this program would be exposed to. Because I travel quite a bit, Mr. Henry. Okay? Okay, Mr. Henry?
Yeah, okay, so you travel quite a bit. That means that you would be exposed much more to the dangers afoot once all of these security measures are stripped away.
That is absolutely correct, and I'm willing to expose myself to that. Because if there's another terrorism attack, and if there's another... an incident is big enough that takes a lot of lives, this is an opportunity for the authorities to have another crime scene and another, what you would call, more evidence. That's the only thing that is going to really help us in this battle against terrorism. We need more information. And quite frankly...
And the only way to get that information is to have another terrorist attack.
No, but I'm saying... that the procedures we're going through right now are so unconstitutional that they have to be stopped, and most likely, sure, someone would take advantage of that and would, take a plane and blow it, drive it into a whatever you want to talk about.
All right, so let's strip away all of these security measures, Mr. Dowder. Let's take them all away. Let's not have any screening. Let's not have any of this checking the shoes. Let's not have any of metal detection. Let's not look at carry-on bags. And someone hijacks a plane, and they crash it into the Capitol of Washington, D.C., or some other beloved monument. They kill all these people. Now what do we have?
Now what we have is we have evidence of who our enemy really is. And we have evidence of how they are proceeding to, continually attack these airliners. And we have evidence of where they're planning this. In other words, we have a batch of new evidence. And what we don't have, are the restrictive and unconstitutional measures that are currently being used. And you've seen the people that reacted about having been patted down. People reacted in a very violent way. People are being violent about it, Mr. Henry. You've got to understand something. These procedures at airports have created a violent reaction on the part of American travelers, and as a traveler myself, and I am not a violent man, but I felt like when I was going through the line that I was feeling like I wanted to be, that I wanted to violate someone instead of having me get it. So we would like to see this, and we would like to see these procedures rolled back. And if somebody's got a better idea on how to protect the aircraft, that's one thing. But right now, what we're concerned with is the violation of the Constitution.
Which is being done every day.
Every day that people travel.
Well, I don't know whether that's true or not, because I recognize that we have a Supreme Court and people have been traveling for a long time.
Well, I don't know that anybody's has challenged it since 9/11. I mean, just all of these things that have been put into place, people are getting... There's one thing to be violated by a terrorism attack. There's another thing to be violated by the terrorism of having your Constitution taken away from you. And that's what we're talking about.
All right. Hold on the line here, Professor Dowder. Jeff Dowder from Caltech, and the security procedures that are in place at airports all over the country, at train stations all over the country, at any place where masses of people meet, to travel from one place to the next, whether it is the body scanning, whether it is the metal detection, x-ray machines, so on and so forth, are patently unconstitutional. And his organization, Contact, Educators and Business Travelers to Restore Constitutionality to Travel, his organization says they have to be stopped now. The ACLU is obviously questioning for their purpose these searches at the Metro. Is it worth absorbing another terror attack? That's what I think the question is, in order for us to restore constitutionality to our traveling. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with Jeff Dowder. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry. are listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. With me is Professor Jeff Downer from Caltech. He's a part-time professor of mechanical physics there. As we talk about the ACLU now is weighing in on these random bag searches, for instance, at the Metro, the security measures that are in place at airports and train stations because of 9/11, because of terrorism. And you, Professor Downer, along with other business travelers, you say these are unconstitutional.
Absolutely. And
all right, so they're unconstitutional, and you are proposing that they be lifted completely.
Absolutely lifted completely, and I think that's the only way you're going to get the attention of the authorities, who are going to be more intent on discovering who is involved in these, you know, terrorism attacks. And the other thing to remember is that even, as we said, even if we do absorb an attack, you know, I mean, our organization's serious. We can get this done. We can get these security measures lifted. And we can do this on behalf of the American people, because the American people have been very clear about this, Mr. Henry. And you heard when we were talking about it, that they, you know, people were being, you know, getting violent about the body scans, you know.
Well, people were really upset, yeah.
Okay. I'm telling those people that we're putting our money where our mouth is. We're going to get all of this rolled back so the American people will finally be free of these security measures. Now, one thing that I got to say, you know, I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is. I'll get on a plane and I'll fly wherever I got to fly to. I go back to different seminars probably two times a month back east. And I'll go back to different seminars. I'll go back to some of the workshops that we do. And I will fly without this onerous security. And the other members of my organization will do that. But do the American people, once we do all this work for them and we get all these security measures lifted, are the American people going to step up and have, you know, I'm going to put it in the best way that I would, are they going to have the guts, you know?
Are they going to have the guts to what, to fly without the security?
Well, to travel, yes, sir. To travel, to have constitutionally, you know, to have constitutionality.
Are you going to ask them, the American people going to have the guts to follow you and travel without any of the security because now their rights are not being violated?
Yes, sir.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL, talking to Jeff Downer here from the organization Contact, Restoring Constitutionality to Travel. So you've pretty much thrown the gauntlet down here. That's what you've done. You've said that you have the guts to travel without security. Other members of your organization have the guts to travel without this security. Now the American people have to step up.
Well, I did see people who were in a great deal of distress last week or the week before, when it came to the, I don't know what you want to call it, when it came to the body scanning.
Yeah, people were getting the pat-downs.
Yeah, the pat-downs. And I saw where people were getting very twisted around and getting, you know, angry and everything like that. And that's when I said to myself, okay, the time's right. And so we began to book the appearances and everything on the TV. And on the radio, too, you know, and so now that's what I'm doing now. And I'm saying to the people, if you have anybody that has called in or anything, I'm saying, look what I'm doing. What are you going to do?
Well, we're still waiting for people to react.
And what do you mean?
We're waiting for people to call, you know, 877-876-PHIL.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying to them. And I think that the people are probably stunned or that I would have the courage. And they're probably stunned that I would have the courage, and they don't, you know.
Well, what are you saying? They're stunned that you would have the courage and they don't. You have said that you will travel on an airliner or in any way, any kind of transportation, without these you call it onerous security. You need the American people to follow you.
Well, we can get it done. We can get the security off of it, but we need people to step up and go on the plane with us. And if people are going to, you know, bitch out, or I'm not bitch out.
You watch your language, if you don't mind.
All right, but what I'm saying, if people are going to, you know, bitch out, or not bitch out, but I mean, if they're going to...
If people are going to chicken out, is that what you mean?
Yeah, if they're going to chicken out, then there's... I don't care. I'll get on a plane, and if it is blown blown up by a terrorist, at least I had constitutional, you know, the Constitution was there.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Would you travel on a plane without that protection? We'll be
Phil.
Back. Phil Hendry Show. All right, we're back on the air here. Jeff Dowder from Caltech, a professor of mechanical physics. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Before we get to some phone calls, you are saying that you are leading this charge, your organization Contact, to go ahead and get on aircraft without this security screening, even if it means a terror attack.
Well, I think that's really what has to be done. Someone has to show the American people who took the first step, I think, when they said, you know, We don't want to have a bee, you know, patted, touched in the way that they've been doing it, and we want some constitutional rights going on about our travel. Okay, that's one thing to talk about it, and you know, go on the talk radio programs and say it. Well, we're saying we'll get it done. We'll get it done, and we'll get rid of all of this onerous, unconstitutional search and seizure and so forth, and we'll go on that aircraft. Even if it means that perhaps it's not as safe, I don't know. But the American people need to follow us on that, onto the aircraft. And I think, you know, it's kind of interesting, Mr. Henry, this is kind of, you know, where the rubber meets the road. You know, there's an old saying about, if you, you know, give me liberty or give me death, is how I feel about it, you know. And something that I wrote down in a journal I was keeping as I was traveling, you know. I mean, I don't know what other, you know, give me liberty or give me death. So I would rather die if I don't have the liberty.
All right, 877-876-PHIL here with Jeff Dowder. Let's go to Brad in Greensboro, North Carolina. Brad, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Jeff Dowder. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Phil, how you doing this evening?
I'm good, thank you.
And I'm just trying to figure out, man, where you get some of these wackos from.
Here is Dan in Chicago. Dan, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. How you doing, Dan? We got Dan in where? In Chicago? Dan Gunn? Okay. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back on the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
Welcome back. We had our phone system basically just kind of blew up there for a moment. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We just all of a sudden lost all of our calls, so we had to go to a break. Professor Dowder, you're there, right?
I'm here, and I'm still here.
Okay, and we'll, you know, we'll continue discussing here. I just lost our calls, but we're talking to Jeff Dowder about the security apparatus that we've established here post 9/11. I understand that it is a unconstitutional apparatus, in your opinion, that the amendments, all of our personal liberties, are being violated. You even went so far as to quote Patrick Henry in your last statement. You know, a lot of what you're saying.
Well, I'm not familiar with the gentleman you're talking or what it is you just said right there, but you're absolutely right.
When I said you quoted Patrick Henry,
I'm reading from a journal that I wrote.
When you said "give me liberty or give me death,"
yes, sir.
That is a quotation from the Virginia politician and firebrand Patrick Henry.
I was not reading anything from Patrick Henry. That was a thought that I had. As I was flying to Baltimore last week for one of our symposiums.
Well, yeah, but that's Patrick Henry.
Okay, but I don't think so. And here's why I'm saying that.
Well, I can tell you that's Patrick Henry. Give me liberty, give me death.
Yeah, no, but you may be thinking of Don't Tread on Me, which is a very similar phrase that Patrick Henry might have said, but I came up with the phrase, give me liberty, give me death, for this very good reason, Mr. Henry. You just follow my logic. Give me liberty or give me death is exactly what our fight is about. I want to have liberty, not to have anybody pat me down, okay? And if that means that I die if in a terrorist attack on the airplane that I'm in, then that's what's going to happen. Okay?
I understand all of what you're saying, but the fact of the matter is, give me liberty or give me death, was something that Patrick Henry said in a speech that he made or some kind of an address that he made. Okay?
Again, with respect, I have to disagree.
Well, I can tell you, sir.
If we just say this one thing, I come up with a lot of sayings and mottos all the time. I mean, it's possible that you're confused. But I'm going to want to go to one area here, Mr. Henry. You're talking about a give me liberty, give me death, an attack, a terrorism attack on an airplane, okay?
All right.
I got to tell you, you know, to my way of thinking, there are worse things in the world. I mean, if it happens, it happens, okay? You know, I get on a plane, I fly, it blows up, I die, or I'm injured, or whatever. I'm not going to have that skew what I got to do on any given day or the thing that I got to do. I mean, I'm not built that way, and I don't think the American people should be built that way either.
And so you're not afraid. If you eliminate all of the scans and all of these security measures, you're not afraid.
I'm not. Am I afraid? I guess. Does it bother me? I guess, for the fact that there'd be other people that'd be dead. But am I going to get hung up and not fly because there's a, maybe there's a terrorist? It goes with the territory. It just goes with the territory. It's something that...
Well, when you say it goes with the territory, no, it doesn't go with the territory. It doesn't go with the territory of flying. We do have security. We do have people to protect us, you know.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it goes with the territory of you're going to be... every day, you know, you could die. And so I just don't worry about it. And if a terrorist was to get up in the plane and say, I got a bomb and I'm going to blow the plane up, I think I'd be like a lot of people, just, hey, you know, have fun. I mean, what are you going to do? You saw what happened on 93. They all get into a fight and plane still, you know, blew up and everything.
Well, it crashed. We didn't know whether it blew up or not. 877-876-PHIL. All right, let's go to a phone call here. We have Scott listening on WLRS in Louisville. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, I was just calling in, and I just can't believe what I'm hearing. You know, you want to sit here and say that there needs to be no security checks before you get on a plane because you feel like your civil rights are being violated. I work pretty hard every day. I go to work, and I try to get a paycheck at the end of the week, and I'd like to enjoy that paycheck. So if I try to get on a plane and family somewhere, and I get blown up, I'm going to be pretty angry about it. So, yeah, I feel like your civil rights are violated, that, you know, we need to have some security checks. There needs to...
Don't you think your constitutional rights are important? I mean, as we said about give me liberty or give me death, you know, that you would rather be alive and not free. And I don't want to... When I wrote that, my thought was...
If you want to die, there's a million other ways to. I mean, you can't just say that there needs to be everybody who gets on a plane shouldn't have to go through a security check just so you can feel a little more comfortable and you don't have to spend 5 extra minutes at the TSA gate.
That's really not what it's about for me, though. It's about the Constitution of the United States, where they're probing and they're touching you and they're feeling you up and they're looking in your bag and looking up your thing. And I think
whenever they wrote the Constitution, that there weren't other people in other countries getting on planes with bombs in their underwear.
Well, but we still have to... Okay, so in other words, why don't we just have a dictatorship? I don't think so.
We need a dictatorship. That's saying that in the society that we live in today, it's sad but very true that it is dangerous for anyone to get on an airplane because of the things that have happened in the past. So if I feel like I need to take 10 extra minutes at the gate to ensure my life, I'm going to do that.
Well, if it violates the Constitution, then you get on the plane, you go, okay, I could die, but I'm a free man, you know, and I'm going to die. Okay,
I'm a
I'll free
die man
free,
too.
And but you'll be a free man when the plane blows up. It's bad, yes, but you'll be free.
Right.
You'll be free when the plane blows up. And by the way, Patrick Henry said, "Give me liberty or give me death."
Mr. Henry, you can say that if you want, but I wrote it down.
I completely agree with sticking by your principles. I'm a man of my principles as well, but as a man of my principles, one of my principles is living.
Yeah, living, even though your constitutional rights just stayed at the gate while you took off? I don't think so.
All right. Thank you very much, Scott, for your call tonight. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Here is Mike, listening on WLRS. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, I'm in agreement with doing away with patting down, but security measures for protection.
Why one and not the other? See, to me, it's all a violation of our Bill of Rights.
Well, I don't feel that touching you is, constitutional. But at the same time, we do need security measures in place for our protection. And
what
to be honest with you, sir, I can't see leading a crusade to do away with security measures altogether. I mean, that's ludicrous.
We're trying to get rid of them to strip it down so we know what our rights are. We don't even know what our rights are anymore. If we could strip it all the way down to the bare studs and go, okay, this is what we've got.
And I'm in agreement that the government tries very hard to strip us of our constitutional rights. But doing away with security altogether, I mean, you're just asking for trouble.
Well, that's right. But once we do get the trouble, then at least we know who we're fighting. And I'm willing to get on an airplane and fly, and if a terrorist goes, okay, we're going to fly
you're an educated idiot. I'm sorry. I don't agree with
you. What are you talking about? Why not? I mean, you remember what I was telling Mr. Henry, give me liberty or give me death, right? Do you remember that?
Absolutely.
Okay. So
there are
measures in place at the airports that they don't need to pat you down, but at the same time,
do you think they need to X-ray your wife so they can see your wife through her clothes? Do you think is that cool? I don't think so. And they're doing that too.
You shouldn't be taking anything through the airport that you're not willing to let someone else see anyway.
What? Why can't I travel? Well, I just believe in give me liberty.
You didn't write
their hands on me. I feel like that there's a security measure in place there that's going to protect me and my family.
They don't need to. They don't need to. They can put an X-ray on you and on your wife. And mostly on your wife, because that's where they get their kicks.
All right, watch it, man. You're saying some stuff about people that are working hard to protect the country, all right?
I'm just saying that give me liberty.
And you didn't write give me liberty or give me death. It was Patrick Henry. Patrick Henry.
I would like to see your source material for that.
All right, anyway, thank you, Mike. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Talking here with Jeff Dowder from, he's a part-time professor of mechanical physics, and Mr. Dowder's involved in a lot of other things. He's with this group called Contact, which is a consortium of business and educators who travel and who want to return constitutionality to our traveling by getting rid of all of these security measures, all of them. And let's take our chances, and if you have the guts, get on that plane and fly. It's what the American people want. Will you follow him? That's what they've said anyway. 877-876-PHIL, and I've looked it up here. He didn't write, give me liberty or give me death. We'll be back. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Yes, the Phil Hendry Show, brought to you in part by Ted's of Beverly Hills. With us, Jeff Dowder. You eating there, Jeff?
I will.
Okay. Back here. Now, here's the story. D.C. Metro begins random bag searches. ACLU unhappy.
Right there proves that this is... right there proves that we've got Constitution. We got the Constitution's all... It's getting shredded as we speak, Mr. Henry, right there when the ACLU is talking about how now you can't even get on a subway without them putting their hands in places that you wouldn't want them to.
And well, they're not talking about doing a pat-down. They're talking about random bag searches.
Well, I think it's interesting, they may put it into kind of, a euphemism, a random bag search. I don't want to be juvenile, But the fact of the matter is, you know as well as I do, that that's what they mean by a random bag search, that they eventually want to expand the law so that they can literally, not figuratively and not in a in a headline that's cute, talk about, you know, a bag search and be, you know, in a literal way.
Well, what are you talking about?
What am I talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking? They'll come out and they'll say, we're going to do a pat-down. Not do a euphemistic random bag search.
What I'm saying, Mr. Henry, and I'm sorry that you've misunderstood me, is that the ACLU is alerting us to what's going on in these metro stations in Washington, D.C., and that this is the first step going through people's personal effects that eventually that is going to be, that they're going to be looking at their people, patting them down, and that's what they meant by the bag. All right. The bag searches.
You're telling me that this headline means random bag search, that eventually it's going to be...
genitals. Now, you can say anything you want, and you can do anything you want, but you're always going to have the government on you, protecting you and doing a whole nanny state thing, and you'll go home at night and you'll go, oh, wow, what a drag, the government is all over me, but I'm alive, right? I'm telling you, I'm willing to risk dying. I'm willing to risk dying, and I'll tell you another thing that I wrote down. The basis of a democratic state is liberty. And in my journal when I wrote that, I was thinking...
You're talking the basis of a democratic state is liberty.
Yes, sir. And in my journal when I wrote that...
That's a quote from Aristotle. See, what's happening here...
No, Mr. Henry, I've been on your program, and you've tried to impugn my education.
I'm not impugning your education, sir. I think your education is obvious. I mean, you're a professor of physics, and...
Well, I'm a professor of mechanical physics, yes, sir.
Okay, fine. But when you say that you wrote Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, which was Patrick Henry, or you say that you wrote...
I wrote that in a... I can show you the notebook and the date on it.
Doesn't matter if there's a date on it. And then you say you wrote the basis of a democratic state is liberty, and Aristotle wrote that. I have to tell you that what's going on, you know, you may have read it somewhere and thought that you thought it up.
No, sir. I can tell you that I made it up. And
you made up Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death. Then how is it that I know that Patrick Henry said that?
Because I believe, sir, that you are thinking that it is a profound and extremely eloquent thing to say, and that there's no way that just an individual could have made it up, and so you want to attribute it to one of our founding fathers instead of just a man like myself. And I work very hard, and I do, you know, and you don't want anyone to think that I can, you know, make up something like that.
I
I can tell because you're confused.
No, I'm not confused. What I'm telling you is I would have no problem, Professor Dowder, telling everybody what a brilliant man you are. What a wonderful phrase, give me liberty or give me death, my God. Can I write that down? I'd have no problem, okay? But I know that you didn't write that.
I heard you on a previous show telling Jesse, you know, Jesse the Body Ventura, that he didn't know anything about Thomas Jefferson. Oh, wow, that took some guts, you know, because if he was in the room with you, obviously he would have, and I'm saying this is a joke, but you know, what they used to do with a guy's head into a turnbuckle was what he would have done, you know, and it's the duty of a patriot to protect his country from the government. And that's another thing I wrote down. I guess you're going to tell me that who? Somebody else done that?
I don't know, sir. I don't know every famous phrase. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Stephen in Raleigh, North Carolina. Stephen, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, sir.
How you doing today? I'm calling because I work for the Newark Airport, and he's talking about not having this. Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here. Go ahead, sir.
And you're talking about not having the staff, the scanners, and everything, not to check the people, which I can agree with you on some point, but after 9/11... Right. The terrorists has changed the whole game. Even though what we have there at the airport is not 100%, it will stop something, but it will not guarantee everything. But if you were to take it away, what we're doing right now is just leaving a free-fall open gate for them to do anything they want to do. So after 9/11, they changed the game. It'd be ridiculous not to have it, even though it's not 100% guaranteed that it will stop everything, but it will stop something. But to take it away...
Right.
You're looking for a real trouble.
I'm willing to risk that. I'm willing to risk that for the Constitution of America, because Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. But, you know, that's the whole basis of give me liberty or give me death. You know, I'll go ahead on. I mean, if the terrorist is going to, because I'm kind of nonchalant about it, you know. I mean, everybody got to die sometime, you know.
And wait a minute. Wait, you know. You're
here to protect us, so. Uh-huh. To take that away for the people of the Constitution, if you take that away, basically right. What you'll be doing is killing more people. You won't be saving more lives, you'll be killing more people. Because now the terrorists will be like, okay, now they're not even checking the airport. We can go do whatever we want to do right now.
So well, you know what else would happen? They would be very open. They would open themselves up. We would know everything about them. You know,
you're talking about sacrificing the lives of a bunch of people so we have more information about terrorists.
I'm willing to bite down on the towel, yeah.
Anyway, Stephen, thank you for your call, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Thank you very much, Professor Doubter. And next hour we have with us Herb Sewell on the pass-out game.
I got one more thing.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
We will not tolerate anyone taking vigilante action.
Yeah, my feelings about this are constantly evolving. I smell.
That most men like to do a lot of things.
You know, you hear just a constant drumbeat of things going wrong, and that it's just taking them a while to get
that
into.
That is a threat.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we go places other talk shows wish they could go, but they can't. They can. An 11-year-old boy allegedly dies after playing the pass-out game. Herb Sewell is going to join us to talk about this game. And we'll discuss just exactly what should be done. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhendryshow.com. You can look at live streaming video of the show, listen to live streaming audio of the show. It's worth it, believe me. And you can see me in my happy times, in my stressed out times, in this festive time of year. Check it out, philhendryshow.com, as well as our archives, thousands of hours, and we're adding to them, obviously, each and every day. And we also have up on the site now 6 new Classic Phil podcasts that will be eventually 20 brand new Classic Phil podcasts before Christmas Day. So this is kind of a little gift to those of you who are not yet subscribers, and you can download those for free. 877-876-PHIL. And on the line with us from, from the Los Angeles area that we really are not at liberty to say where he is. Right now he is still on probation. Whether we call it probation or parole, I don't know the difference between the two things, is Herb Sewell. And the reason we're talking about this, and Herb, let me just explain, is the fact that you were convicted and incarcerated for crimes against children as well as women, and you spent 8 years at the Atascadero Forensic Hospital in Atascadero, California, and you have since been released, and you were at a halfway house and technically on parole. Is that right?
That is correct, yes.
And what are you doing for a living now?
I work as a research assistant. I do primarily, my work is from... it's from my residence, so I'm telecommuting, if you want to put it that way. But primarily because of the fact that I'm not allowed certain places, which I certainly understand. And I do want to, if I might, Phil, make clear to your audience this evening that I'm very well aware of the crimes that I committed. I'm very well aware of the damage that I did. So I try, whenever I'm on your program or other radio programs, television programs, I do try to give the audience the benefit of my wisdom, insofar as I can.
All right, well, that's well said. And we do like to talk with you from time to time about these different situations. Now, this was something I didn't quite talk to Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. They thought that you would be good for a stand-in guest on this pass-out, guess, choking game?
That is correct, yes.
Do you know about this?
I know about it, yes. I know that it's something that pre-adolescent or adolescent young men primarily engage in.
And how do you know about this?
Well, I know about it because of my former life. I did witness it. I engaged in it. I can tell you that I'm not trying to back away from any crime that I committed, but the things that I witnessed, no one was harmed in that sense. So I think that goes, I think that speaks to my character, that while, yes, I did commit crimes against children, I did not harm them with the choking game. They harmed themselves, and I probably harmed myself because I joined in, but neither they nor I harmed each other. The choking game is something that alters the consciousness briefly of the individual by restricting or constricting oxygen to the brain. So you can say that in many ways you can call this a cheap high if you want. It does not involve the purchasing of a drug. It doesn't involve the inhaling or huffing of anything. It simply is the restricting or constricting the fluctuation blood pressure.
Now, you know about an 11-year-old boy that the parents claim was killed by that. Now, I don't know, looking at the information I have, whether in point of fact this is what happened to the boy, but the parents claim that it was from this so-called fainting game, tap-out, hangman, elevator, blackout, the pass-out game, the choking game, that was what this kid was involved in. And they found evidence of this on his Facebook page, and apparently there were some detectives involved in the investigation of this. Have you ever heard of anyone dying from it?
I have not, but I would not be surprised. And that's why I feel that this is an example, I think, Phil, of young people. They're going to do what they're going to do. And the best thing that you can do is, rather than try to run around and restrict the behavior of these young people and try to keep them from doing things that they're going to be very interested in doing, I think that the thing to do is to give them the proper tuition in how to do it.
Now, in how to do what? In how to do this?
In how to do this choking game. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, now please follow me. We do teach sex education. Do we want children to have sex? The answer to that is no. We do teach children the purposes of a condom. Do we want them to use those if they don't have to? If, in other words, do we want them even involved in the activity that would require a condom? Well, the answer to that is no. We find ourselves teaching young people. We find ourselves teaching young people things that we'd rather not teach them. But we do it for their safety. Now, I propose the same thing happen in this choking game.
Well, this is a different thing entirely, Herb. You've got, for instance, you're talking about using sex education, understood, the condoms, understood, it's needed, it's necessary, and so on. But to teach a kid how to properly injure himself, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I absolutely understand it. When you say properly injure himself, if it's done properly, yes. If it's done properly, yes, he's going to get high. But that's what he wants to...
Well, what do you mean he's going to get high? Well, if it's done properly, there's restriction of blood.
Well, I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of the kid doing it. If he does it, and he does it properly, the way that we would have him do it, the safe way to do it...
Is there a safe way of doing this?
Well, there's a way of doing it so that you're not strangling yourself. There's a way of doing it so that you're not hanging yourself from a doorknob. And I think that if you look at the tragedy of people such as Keith Carradine, it was not Keith Carradine, it was the gentleman David Carradine, John Carradine. John Carradine was their father, and I don't think that he was involved in quite anything quite so bizarre, exotic in those days. Of course, it was all cocaine, heroin, or whatever they did. I don't know if they...
Well, let's forget about John Carradine, because he's a much older man, and you're right. That wasn't even...
It probably wasn't a consideration.
No, it wasn't a consideration. So you're talking about David Carradine, and I don't know about that. We're talking about young people. So is there a way of teaching young people how to play this pass-out game or this fainting game so they don't hurt themselves.
I believe, Phil, that the way to influence the action of young people is to protect them, first of all, is to understand they're going to do what they're going to do. So you look at a young person, you say, well, they're going to use drugs. So the best thing that I can do is to ensure that they're not buying drugs from some thief or some liar or some denizen of the gutters of America, that there is this medical marijuana and so forth. I don't know how it works.
Well, that's not for young people.
Well, I understand, but what I'm trying to say is that there must be some proper way of doing this.
By the way, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Herb Sewell about the choking game, the pass-out game. An 11-year-old boy allegedly died from it. How do we keep our kids, these little boys, from doing this? It's a game where you sort of tie something around your throat, and the kid passes out. You're saying we need to teach them.
Well, I think in schools, you teach them the way you teach sex education. We can show kids the safest way to play the choking game, to get the maximum physical high without killing themselves. If we don't, we're putting our kids in danger.
Now, what do you mean the maximum physical high, though? That's the part.
They're not even going to listen to you. If at least you don't promise them, I can show you how to do this, and it'll be good, and it will be safe. And
is that really something you want to say to an 11-year-old kid?
I think we have no choice, Phil, because they're going to do it anyway. And the way to talk to these young people is to say to them, because for whatever it's worth, I was around young people for a great many years of my life. And
yes, but Herb, when you were around young people, you were committing crimes, vicious, violent crimes.
I understand.
So I don't want to know about your experiences other than this idea that you have, that teaching them how to do it so they get the high out of it and still not hurt themselves. I don't know that that's possible.
But what I can tell you, Phil, just like sex education, and just like teaching a young person, for instance, how to load and use a gun, because you know they're going to go find a gun somewhere and play with it, so you can teach them how to load it, how to use it, how to aim it, target, and all these things. The same thing with the choking game. You say to them, all right, I know you're going to get a towel out of the closet there, and when I leave, you're going to choke yourself to try to get high. Let me show you how to do it so that you get a good rush, and at the same time, we don't find you hanging from as I mentioned, the doorknob, or one of the doorknobs on the French doors.
Well, that is just, that's bizarre. That's macabre.
Absolutely, I totally agree.
That's unbelievable. Let me teach you how to do this so at least I come home and you're alive.
Absolutely, but what else are you going to do?
Tell them that it's unsafe. Teach them that it's unsafe.
Kids don't want to be taught anything by adults because they don't trust adults. They think adults are only there to remove all of the fun and joy from their lives. So they automatically believe that adults are there for one reason only, and that is to take whatever fun they're having, whatever good times they're having, and to crush it, if you understand. It's just to crush the humor, crush the joy, and crush the laughter from their lives. That's how young people see adults. We must, simply must, turn that tide so that young people will look at an adult and say, he's there to keep me safe, and maybe he has a better idea of how I can get high or...
Well, no, not get high.
Well, but you just don't think like a kid, you know?
All right. 877-876-PHIL. Should we teach kids how to do this choking game so that at least they know how to do it safe? That's what Herb Sewell is saying, a man who is in prison for crimes against kids. Herb Sewell spent 8 years at Atascadero. He was a child molester. And after 8 years at Atascadero, he was released, and he is now in a halfway house. And he's weighing in on this so-called choking game or fainting game or tap-out game. Kids are going to do it anyway, so why not teach them so that they don't kill themselves? 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Your call's next for our guest, Herb Sewell. And then we have Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard at our news hour coming up on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
famous Bill Hendry Show.
Do. We're with Herb Sewell, and we're talking about this choking game that some young adolescent males are playing, where they kind of tie off their throat or they tie off their windpipe, and they experience some sort of a rush. And Herb, you were in prison for child molestation. Were you involved in this kind of thing with these young people?
Well, I don't want you to think this is child molestation.
Well, were you involved in this choking game?
Yes, I was. And so I saw them. I didn't know anything about it. A lot of them told me about it. And so I did it. And I have to tell you that it is a very trans... It is a trans... transporting experience. What do I mean by that? These are young adolescent men who have found a way to transport their consciousness beyond the mundane by simply tying a belt or a rope or having a friend give them the Heimlich maneuver or some other way of restricting the oxygen to the brain. Now, once I learned this, and I learned it from an 11-year-old by the name of Casey, and
I don't want to know about the kids that you were with, okay? Because this is a criminal, these are criminal acts you're involved in.
I apologize. Once I learned it, I did it a couple of times because I wanted to get it down just to show that I knew how to do it. And I found that I liked it. I proceeded to continue doing it well into my incarceration at Atascadero. And even after I got out, it took me quite a bit of therapy and working with the doctors before I was able to really stop the use of this towel game. I called it the towel. Where I would restrict my oxygen and feel myself in the cavity, what I call the cavity of creation.
What are you? Are you talking about you doing this?
I'm talking about me doing it, yes. And it was very addictive. And I did do it, and I did enjoy it. And I had to go through 6 months of therapy to extract myself from the use of what I call the towel and the cavity of creation.
And what is the cavity of creation?
Well, that's essentially where you go when you take a belt or a towel and choke yourself standing in a bathroom or a garage. You are transported into the cavity of creation, which is the matrix.
And are you telling me that this has some spiritual value? Because what I'm hearing here, in other words, is you're giving me information about where 11-year-old boys go in their minds when they choke themselves in this choking game. This kid died. You understand that?
Well, I do understand that, Phil. I'm talking for myself. I don't know about 11-year-old boys. I don't think that they have the capability of interpreting the experience, the spiritual experience that they're going through.
And so you're telling me that this is a spiritual experience?
For me, it was. I don't know about an 11-year-old boy. I wouldn't vouch for them. I know that when Casey taught me that...
I don't want to hear about any kid...
I apologize.
Any kid that you were involved in, because it was criminal behavior. What I want to find out here is you have proposed that there's a way to teach kids how to do this and not hurt themselves.
Well, that's what I was getting at. I believe through the use of the pantyhose or the use of a clothesline, you can realize worlds you've never known before.
And through the use of a clothesline or pantyhose, you can realize worlds you've never known before. Do you hear what you're saying?
Well, what I'm trying to say to you is the following thing, Phil, that children are going to do this regardless.
Well, we've heard this argument before.
Yes.
We've heard the argument before that children are going to do it regardless. And people such as myself and others will come back with, well, they're going to do it. Well, then we should not have them do it. We should stop them from doing it. We should exert some parenting and teach them not to do it.
Well, I do not concur. And while I was put in prison for child molestation, I think you at least have to give me credit for having spent time around kids.
No, I don't give you credit for that at all. I don't think you spent any quality time around kids getting to know them or understand them. You spent time around kids committing crimes. And so you learning what you call the towel.
That's what I call it. But you can use the towel, you can use a fan belt. But you are transported to a level that the Bodhisattva...
Are you hearing what you're saying? In other words,
parents are very naive on these topics, Phil, and this is why I'm saying to you, when you talk about this with a parent, they will look at you with wide eyes. I have talked to parents about this. I've not let them know who I am. They don't know that they're standing in the presence of a child molester. We might be in a supermarket line somewhere, and there might be a headline there on a magazine, and I'll say something to the effect of, well, look at that. Look at that 11-year-old trying to choke himself with a fan belt, and they'll say, what are you talking about? And I'll go on and explain to them, and I'm telling you, Phil, it's almost criminally sad to see these parents. Their eyes glaze over. They have no idea what's going on. They don't know what's going on in their own home after they leave and go to work.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, talking here with Herb Sewell. Here is Paul in Durham, North Carolina. Go ahead, Paul. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes. Well, my concern with this is we are allowing a child molester to give advice on how children should behave. And second here, by doing this whole choking game thing and teaching them how to do this, we are promoting kids on how to kill themselves and promoting child suicide.
No. We are teaching them how to do it safely from the standpoint of the cavity of creation.
And hold on for a minute here, because, Paul, I want to address your very, very important concerns about Herb. Herb, hold on as well. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. I don't want anybody thinking that we have Herb Sewell on here to give advice on how to kill themselves. We'll be back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, The Choking Game. Should we just teach kids how to do it safely so they don't kill themselves? 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back to our show, and with us is Herb Sewell. Mr. Sewell had spent 8 years in Atascadero, a forensic hospital for the criminally insane. I have to be very, very blunt with you. After his commission and conviction of crimes against children, Mr. Sewell underwent therapy and all kinds of treatment there, and is now out and is on parole at a halfway house and joins us in this hour and other hours, as we talk about different aspects of society's approach to crime. Now, tonight we are talking about children that use this pass-out game, this choking game. And you were saying, Mr. Sewell, that they should be taught the proper way so they don't kill themselves. Now, let me get back to Paul here on the line. He's in Durham, North Carolina. And I got Paul on the line. Paul, you there?
Yeah.
Okay, sir, I wanted to, just before I get to you, Paul, I wanted to ask you, Herb, you know, how do you expect to be taken seriously or even expect to be heard having come from the life that you come from, having come from a life in prison and the crimes you've committed?
Well, the only reason why I say that my ideas are sound is because I've approached the idea of this what I call the towel, the choke game, from the standpoint of the spiritual experience. Now, I understand that 11-year-old, 12, 13-year-old boys are not going to approach it that way, but I have, and I recognize there is a spirituality. You can take a fan belt or you can take a piece of chicken wire and choke yourself and emerge in a bodhisattva state.
What has this got to do with 11-year-old kid?
Well, I'm getting to that. That it must be attractive. That so, if you teach them the proper way,
and is there a proper way?
Well, I think there's a way that you don't kill yourself, and then you don't kill yourself, and then maybe you enter at least briefly the cavity of creation.
Okay, go ahead, Paul. Your point.
Well, my point in this is that if you don't have them do it at all, then you eliminate the risk. Teaching them how to do it properly, there's really no proper way of doing it.
Yeah, if there is such a thing.
There is no such thing as proper way. Now, me, working as a security officer in the state of North Carolina, if I saw a parent teaching their child how to do this, I would have them put in jail and charged with child abuse. And I would actually handcuff them myself.
By the way, if you saw a parent, say, sitting in the car with their child, And they had what was at hand. And I suppose in a car, what would be at hand? A jump rope? Let's say a child's jump rope. A jump rope or licorice, whatever you can choke off the windpipe with. And you see a parent teaching this child so that the child can enter the cavity of creation.
And nobody knows what you mean by cavity of creation.
Well, the highest state of consciousness. You would have that person arrested, sir?
I sure would. You know, anytime you're teaching a child how to strangle herself, that would be something I would have them arrested for. I do not tolerate any type of child abuse. I don't tolerate any type of or that anybody that has harmed a child.
You wouldn't have liked me back in the day, I'll tell you that.
All right, we already know about that, Herb.
All right. But I can tell you...
Sir, it's not about whether I like you or don't like you, sir. It's really about the point of you're trying
to say
that it's okay for parents to teach your child...
To teach their kids. And this man is saying that even with a parent, he would arrest the parent.
Well, I think he's stepping over the line there, because I think if a parent is trying to teach a child the towel... And is trying to make the child familiar with the towel, so that the child.
Well, Herb, I would really have to say that it's about time that you go on back in and get some more treatment because you really need it.
Well, I don't know that a security guard in North Carolina is qualified to make that statement, and I think that you're prejudiced against me because you're law enforcement.
Well, that goes without saying, I think. In any event, Paul, I thank you very much.
Now, wait a minute. I want this man to tell me if a parent is familiarizing his child with the towel and the consciousness of the towel, the consciousness expansion of the towel, why it is he would have that parent arrested of Brian.
He'd have the parent arrested, obviously, because it is an abusive thing. You have yet to tell us, and we're talking here with Herb Sewell, our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Talking with Herb Sewell about this, and you've heard about kids choking themselves and getting high off of that. There's something having to do with the restriction of oxygen to the brain for brief periods of time that create an elevated consciousness or a mood change. And the idea that Mr. Sewell is on the line here, a convicted child molester, talking about how it can be responsibly taught to kids.
But Mr. Henry, if I could interrupt, you had me on the program. You had me on the program.
I have you on the program to talk about ways that we can ensure the safety of kids. I didn't know...
This is going to... Look, it is irresponsible. Irresponsible. And I want to underline those two syllables. Irresponsible. That's a three-syllable word. Irresponsible, a three-syllable word. Now, why is it a three-syllable word? Because we want to take our time. We want to luxuriate over those syllables. We want to live in that way. Irresponsible. And why do I say that? Because that applies to the parents. The parents are irresponsible not to teach the kids the safe way, the cavity of creation way, the elevated consciousness of the bodhisattva way, to strangle yourself and to do this that they know they are going to do, and there's nothing that the parent can do to stop them from doing it.
No, you can't say that, and I don't like you saying that because a kid's going to listen to you. Okay.
Well, you've pretty much soured my reputation among kids.
No, I haven't soured. Mr. Sewell, I don't know whether you're trying to be funny or not.
No, sir, I can assure you I'm not.
All right, well, I haven't soured anything. You have. By your own actions, by your own life, by the crimes you committed.
I understand that.
You soured whatever attitude anybody will have towards you, be they children or adults. Okay? So what you bring to this show tonight is an expertise, perhaps, in how to keep children safe. And that we're willing to hear. But I'm asking you to give me background and back up what you're saying, how it is teaching a kid how to choke himself is going to keep him safe.
I personally think that the kids are going to do it anyway. And this is something, Phil, if I leave you with anything here tonight, I leave you with this. No matter what it is you don't want a child to do, they're going to try to do it anyway. It is in the nature of a child. It doesn't matter what it is. Is it drug use? Is it the towel? Is it the towel and the cavity of creation? Is it
what is with the towel and the cavity of creation?
That's simply my term for it.
Let's call it what it is, the choking game, okay?
I really resent calling it the choking game, because there's so much more. When you say choking game, you're thinking more of, you want to put the word chicken in there. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't know what you're saying.
But it sounds juvenile to call it the choking game.
Well, because it is juvenile, dangerously juvenile.
All right, well, but I call it towel. And no matter what it is, whether it's towel, whether it's chicken, choke, you know, whether it is any of these things, you and I both know children are going to try to do them. It could be cold-blooded murder. I'm telling you, Phil, I've been around some kids. You don't want me to talk about it because I committed, you know, child molestation, but the kids I was around, and yes, I apologize for saying this, yes, did molest, talked about committing homicide, they talked about robbing banks, they talked about...
No, you're going to try to say all of these things to make those kids look bad, as if they deserved what you did. You understand?
No, I'm not, not those ones. These are different kids.
Different kids?
Yeah, I never laid a hand on these kids. They talked about serial murder, committing bank robbery. They talked about explosives. They talked about white-collar crime, wire transfers, internet transfers, internet crime. I was around some 9-year-olds that would curl your hair. You have to understand. And so if a child is going to get online and commit internet fraud, would you rather that they do it in a way where they'll get caught? Or would you rather...
I would rather they not do it at all.
Well, it's not going to happen. You're living in a dreamland, and you, like so many of these parents, you are so naive. I tell you, you are so naive to think they won't do it, Phil. You almost... I don't know whether to cry or to laugh.
If you put a kid online, and you're telling me that a kid is going to commit internet fraud, or they're going to hack a computer, you might as well teach them how to do it well.
You might as well, because they're going to do it anyway. And the parents think like you. Oh, I'll teach little Billy. I'll teach little Susie not to do this. Well, they're going to do it anyway. And the sooner you teach them how to do it in a way that they can at least spend their lives in freedom and not in a federal prison, the better they'll be. And the better off you'll be, because you won't be driving to places like Leavenworth or Supermax or wherever it is you have to go with a basket of sandwiches and fruit that you know that poor child will have to share with other inmates within 5 minutes of you leaving. So don't kid yourselves, Mr. and Mrs. America. If your child is going to perform internet fraud, wire fraud, hacking computers, getting into a Department of Defense computer, for instance, or State Farm computer, or WikiLeaks, if you wish, you might as well teach them how to do it in a way that they won't get caught. Otherwise, you are driving for hours to Supermax with your little basket of goodies that young person will not even see, because every career criminal on his tier will have already torn into it. Well, what do you mean? You see, Phil, I know a little bit about being inside, and believe me, friend, teachers share responsibility. You should also teach this.
All right, Herb, well, I...
thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome. Now I'm going to go back into my hole, which is where they allow me, now that I'm on parole. I'll go into my hole, and I'll make sure that I don't hurt anybody, and I'll never be on your show again.
Did he hang up?
Yeah, he did.
All right, Herb Sewell here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So make sure that you teach your kids properly how to commit, internet hacking. Otherwise, they go to Supermax, and the basket of goodies that you drive hours to bring them will be torn apart by the career criminals on their tier. Wow.
You sound like you know what he's talking about.
877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show, the News Hour with Bud and Robert coming up. And tomorrow night, it's the Christmas Carol with Phil Hendry.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We do have our news hour next hour with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman and Margaret Gray joining us. Margaret, in New York, they had a billboard that was put up by atheists, and it was, I guess it was something along the lines of don't buy into the myth.
Yeah, it was a billboard put up by the American Atheists out of Wisconsin, and I think it was a well-intentioned effort to tell people that there are other ways of looking at this time of year. And as an atheist, and I have been an atheist for a great many years, even though I don't bear any grudge against the people who are religiously inclined, I am a pagan, and I have subscribed to Wiccan beliefs.
And well, you just called yourself an atheist.
If I could finish what I'm saying, I'd very much appreciate it.
No, I forgive me.
If I could finish what I'm saying, I'd very much appreciate it.
I understand that, Margaret, but I had a...
If I could finish what I got, Almighty...
Let her say what you want.
What do you want?
Margaret, I have the right to ask a question, okay?
What do you want? I had something that I wanted to do for me and for people in the audience. What do you want?
I am simply saying that I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there's a difference between an atheist and a pagan. An atheist is someone that doesn't believe in a deity. Pagans do believe in a deity. They may believe in a multitude of deities.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay, are you done?
I'm done asking the question.
All right. What I did, Phil, is I stopped down and I allowed you to say what you wanted to say. Now, I'd like to continue with what I'm saying, if it's all right with you.
So you're not going to answer my question?
If it's all right with you.
No, it's not all right with me.
Well, wait.
I guess you have to do what you want.
All right. It's not all right with you. Is that right?
No, it's not all right with me.
What do you want, then? What can I do for you? What can I do? To quote the great Orson Welles, Phil, what can I do in the depths of your ignorance? What can I do?
Well, in the depths of my ignorance, Margaret, would you please explain to me the comment that you call yourself an atheist and you're a pagan?
Is that what you want me to do to explain that?
Yes, that's what I'd like you to do.
Because we have taken up an entire 3 minutes of a period of your program that I was told by David Hall, by Bud Dickman, and by your operational branch, Robert Leonard, would be mine and mine alone to put forward something to your audience that I thought would be of benefit. But I'm not allowed to do that. I have to undergo your interrogation because you think that it's funny or somehow you get...
I don't think it's funny at all. I think it's a very good question. Would you tell me that that's not a good question? When you call yourself an atheist and you call yourself a pagan...
I am an atheist. As such, I am a pagan. I believe in Wicca and the Wiccan religion. The Wicca people, or the Wiccan people, believe in Wicca. They believe in the Wicca way. I'm not completely familiar with it, but I do know it is non-Christian. And as such, is a pagan or atheist belief. Now, does that answer your question? God Almighty.
You can't be.
Is that Frank?
Yes, it is Frank.
Could I speak to him?
No, you may not speak to him.
What if you want?
Never mind. Does that answer your question?
No, it does not.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't answer the... Margaret, when you say that you are a pagan and you believe in Wicca and that makes you an atheist, I don't understand that. Atheists don't believe in a deity.
I am an atheist because I reject the Christian faith. Do you understand? And so do pagans. And so therefore, we're what?
You're a pagan.
I'm an atheist, too.
Atheist, too, yeah.
No, you're not an atheist, too. That's wrong. Okay?
Are you telling me, my God, the gall of this man. You know, Phil, you do a talk show. You're not William F. Buckley. You're not David Susskind. You're not sitting there. You're not even on The View. You do a talk show late at night. You know, Phil, I love you. I really do. But you're a late-night talk show host, and it's about as low on the ladder as you can get in the entertainment field. You sit there night after night.
Thank you very much for that.
Oh, don't. Yeah, look at this. He's feeling sad. Do you want us to all feel sorry for you?
No, no, that's okay. But I'm, you know, I've been belittled, and the question I asked is a very good question.
And what was your question?
Oh, did we forget?
Mike, you watch your tone with me.
All right, fine. You're a pagan, you're a Wiccan. You're an atheist. Those things don't go together. Atheists don't believe in God. Pagans and Wiccans do. They believe in spirits. They believe in a spirit world. They believe in gods or godheads, whatever you want to say.
I am not familiar with godhead, and I don't know if that's something that you and Bud Dickman decided to put into this hour to be vile and crude. But
no, I did not. It's a term used in the pagan religions, godhead. It is a kind of it's a deity.
You know what? I think you're lying. I love you, Phil, but I think you're lying, and I think you put it together with that Dickman.
No, I didn't put anything together. Get out of here, bud. So I would say that what you believe is, in other words, anyone that rejects Christianity is an atheist.
Absolutely.
And so the current school of atheist is not so much someone that doesn't believe in God. They want to tear down Christianity.
Well, I think that goes without saying, Phil.
Okay. So I think what you're saying, essentially, is that the current school of atheist is a sort of a hypocritical school.
Excuse me. Watch what you're saying.
No, it's a very hypocritical school where they don't really care about pagan or Native American or any other religious system. It's just that they want to rip the Judeo-Christian ethic. So you're not really an atheist. You just don't like the Judeo-Christian system of belief. Belief.
Belief. Nice going there, Don DeLuise. Belief. Did you hear him? Yeah, he lisped. Did you hear what you said, Phil?
Yes, I misspoke. Are you going to make that an issue?
No, I won't make that an issue, Phil. I won't make that an issue. Oh, my God, did you hear him? You went belief.
I know what I said. Do you want to address what I'm saying?
Well, I'd like to know what it was you said. You said a Judeo-Christian system, or I should say, system of belief. Wow.
Hey, honey. You had your drink?
Yeah, hey, Phil. Phil, the trolley car's leaving for Finocchio's in 5 minutes.
Get rid of them.
Yeah.
We'll be back here in the world-famous... What a child. We'll be back in the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Coming up, Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman in our news hour. And I think Gary Dupree, that's me.
Yeah, it's great.
Uh-huh.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
I'm embarrassed about because I do nothing but rep for the Haitian people.
Was Lindsay out partying that night?
No, she wasn't. It's all a lie. She did not party. She didn't
smell it.
What did you hear?
Same thing everyone else heard.
Slap the young lady on her buttock.
She's going to hell, this bitch.
They disrespecting my culture, man. Disrespecting my people, man. We can't stand up for this, man.
World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast. Four a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. What the hell happened there?
They disrespected my culture, man. Disrespected my people.
That's
man.
What I thought. Our number 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. And, of course, we're online at philhenryshow.com, where you can go and look at the live streaming video of the show right now, such as it is, such as we are, such as we am. philhenryshow.com, man. And tomorrow night, it's a Phil Henry Christmas Carol as we replay the original performance, live performance from 2009. We haven't done anything, man, other than we're going to replay it. That was a live performance of the Christmas Carol. I say that because, you know... Some guys tape them, you know.
Yeah, well, a lot of guys are going to tape it.
Thanks, bud. You don't have to yell, man. Wait till the music's over with. A foot fetish video allegedly starring Jets coach Rex Ryan and his wife leaks online. Michael Lohan talks to the press about Lindsay Lohan. Plus, which star brought in the biggest box office dollars this year? Was it Leonardo DiCaprio, Daniel Radcliffe, or Johnny Depp, or, Michael Lohan? PhilHenryShow.com is our website, so... Let's take a look at the, first of all, mention again that we will have right in this hour tomorrow night. So if you're listening tomorrow night, this hour will contain a replay of our 2009 Phil Hendry's A Christmas Carol. And it was performed live at that time, but you're asking me why I'm not performing it, Bud?
Yeah, why wouldn't you do it again?
You know what, man? If I did it again, what's the point? I mean, we did it. We did it good the first time. It's goofy. It's weirded out. It's you know, all jacked up. You know, Robert?
Yeah, I mean, it's got a real gonzo feel to it, man. I mean, what are you going to change, you know?
Well, you could rewrite it and everything.
Rewrite it how, man? You want somebody else playing Scrooge?
No.
Because, Bud, you play Scrooge.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know who else is in it.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know who else is in it. I don't know the parts that were played by the different people that we have on the show, our different guests. So that'll be in this hour tomorrow night on the Phil Hendry Show. Check it out. And as far as the video cast goes, it'll be airing on our we'll be airing, you know, our video cast. You'll see me. You'll hear the audio of the replayed show. We were hoping to show the actual video itself from last year, but it has since been frankly, it has since been removed from our archives, because when it comes to video archives, and this was before we had the site redesigned, so there was a lot of weird stuff going on, man. We just weren't able to hold on to stuff. It's a very, very big file. We had RC in it, and we had Bobby Dooley. We had Steve, Margaret, they're in it, but I don't remember what parts they played. Do you recall?
I think Margaret was like one of the ghosts of Christmas, like, what do they call it, tomorrow, something like that?
Yeah, she was a ghost of Grisman tomorrow.
Who's Grisman?
Right. Christmas.
Yeah. The ghost of, what do you mean, tomorrow? The ghost of Christmas future.
Yeah.
That's what she was?
I think so. And then I think that I played the ghost. I think I played a ghost.
That's pretty funny.
Why?
Well, three guesses.
Hey, man,
watch out, okay?
Well, tell him that, man.
All right, don't worry about it. He's kidding around.
Uh-huh.
He's kidding around, okay?
Always trying to do that race humor.
Take it easy. All right, so in any event, we'll have it tomorrow night, starting at midnight Pacific time, 3 a.m. Eastern time, here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Now, this is way out there, man. I don't know. First of all, it's not so goofy when you consider that married couples are married couples. And what they do is their business. This is a story of Jets coach Rex Ryan, and it's a story of some foot fetish videos, I guess, that he and his wife made. Now, I don't know that it's anybody's business. In fact, I know that it's no one's business. I don't know how these leaked out. They were posted on the internet. We'll find out, won't we? If he put them there, which I gotta say, I just doubt that he did, that's a little mental. But if somebody else did, then the guy becomes a laughingstock. He and his wife are into this thing. You know, I would love to just, you know, 5 seconds in every bedroom in America, or maybe not. You know,
I wouldn't want that. That'd be frightening, man. Oh, God. Oh, Lord.
Well, all right. Okay. I wouldn't want to be 5 seconds in every bedroom in America. But if you got some video on every married couple there is, brother, it'd be real ugly. Real ugly. So appearing subdued and chagrined at his midweek press briefing Wednesday, Jets coach Rex Ryan declined to answer questions about reports that his wife Michelle had appeared in a number of foot fetish videos with him posted on the internet. He repeatedly described the situation as a personal matter. Now we're going to play for you Rex Ryan's comments. Here is Coach Ryan in one of the, this is from the foot fetish film.
Yeah, this is audio from a foot fetish film. Like, I don't know if he's sucking her toes. I don't know what's going on.
All right, well, you don't have to tell me, okay?
What, do you want it to be a surprise?
No, I don't want it to be a surprise. I don't need him describing what's going on. In one of the foot fetish videos, a woman who appears to be Michelle Ryan, we can't be certain, lounges in her car with her feet hanging out the window. A man, who is allegedly Rex Ryan, confronts her. The audio levels on the woman are less than optimal. It's an amateur video. Who took the video? I don't know. Here's the audio. Let's listen.
Oh, you don't have to put your feet in. You can leave them out.
Sure?
Yeah, oh yeah. In fact, you have really beautiful feet.
Thank you. You know, most people do think, most men do think my feet are pretty. Because they're, well, they're soft and they're petite. And of course, they're
They are beautiful. Do you mind if I touch them?
Oh, God. You imagine the players having to hear this?
Well, who says they got to hear it?
Well, that's true. Anyway, now the man, supposedly Rex Ryan, I don't know, the man just loves feeling those feet.
I can touch them.
Yes.
Thank you.
What do you think?
Wow, they're like really soft.
Oh, yeah.
They're like really soft.
Oh, yeah.
Take good care of them. Dress them up. Give them shoes. Show off their toes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Keep them like a pocket.
Is it okay to touch them again?
Okay, this is weird. I don't think I've ever in my entire life experienced anything quite like this, hearing a professional football coach from the NFL on the radio as he talks about his wife's feet. And why are we playing this? Well, because we can. Apparently, touching the feet didn't quite satisfy the man.
Can I smell him?
Wants to smell him now.
What?
What are you doing, Robert?
A lot of things with those feet.
What did he say? Wait, I got to play that again. What did he say?
Can I smell it?
A lot of men.
Most men want to smell
them? Most men like to do a lot of things with those feet.
A lot of things?
Yes, I believe they do.
Oh, well, ma'am, can I take your number or see your driver's license? Thank you. I'm going to turn this thing off.
All right, so there you have it. You know, I'm going to say this. I think it's great that a married couple can stay excited about each other, you know.
Oh, man, you gotta, come on, be honest about it, man. That's weird.
That's none of my bit. They're married, man. They're having some kicks. How long have they been married? I think that a married couple staying interested in each other in any way that they possibly can is a good thing. I think that these poor people have been embarrassed. Unless I find out how the stuff got on the internet, like if one of them put it there. Here is Rex Ryan. He wasn't answering any questions from reporters about the leaked foot fetish videos.
Hi. Well, you know, obviously I knew, you know, these questions, you know, this question's coming and things. You know, this is a personal matter, and I'm not going to discuss it.
Could you confirm if that was you and your wife in that video?
Again, you know, this is a personal matter, and, you know, I hope you can respect the fact that I wish not discuss it.
This poor guy, man, this is going to be following him.
Man, that'd be asking him question all for like the rest of his career.
Unless somehow, you know, I remember a quote from Ned Beatty. And you remember Ned Beatty? Ned Beatty was in the movie Deliverance, okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Squeal Like a Pig?
Squeal Like a Pig, yes, that Deliverance. And Ned Beatty played the actor, he played the character who was told to squeal like a pig by these rednecks, okay? These are city boys that are up hunting for the weekend or whatever the hell it was they were doing, and they get waylaid by these rednecks, these real weird asses that attack them and attack this character played by Ned Beatty. Now, apparently, for years after that film came out, Ned Beatty would hear on the street or when he was walking someplace, squeal like a pig.
Really?
Yeah. And he finally was quoted as saying, the next guy that says that to me, I'm gonna knock the guy out. I don't care if I go to jail. I'm going to get physically violent with anybody that walks up to me and says that. And he says, I'm happy to go to jail. He says, rape isn't funny. And, you know.
What would it be rape?
That's what happened with Squeal Like a Pig.
Oh.
What do you think?
I don't know, man. I don't follow that kind of thing like you do.
I don't follow it either. It's in a movie and it's famous and everything.
All right. So now you know. But this poor guy, this is not anything that was for publication. This wasn't anything for anything. So you heard the normally ebullient Ryan, who often treats the briefing like a stand-up comedy routine, was anything but jovial Wednesday, opening up his comments by going over the injury report and then taking questions. When asked if he and his wife had made these videos, which first appeared on the website Deadspin.com and were later reported by the Daily News, Ryan said it's a personal matter. His lack of denial could indicate that the woman in the video is his wife of 22 years, that the male voice heard off camera is his. One of the four videos on Deadspin.com showed the woman, and you heard all of this stuff. The petite blonde showing off her toes bears an uncanny resemblance to Michelle Ryan. Well, at least it's his wife. Boy, oh boy, what a world we live in. What a society we live in. Do you think there will ever be a day when the American people can collectively look in the mirror and say, you know, we ought to be ashamed of ourselves? Honest to God. Because we feel so sorry for ourselves, and we talk about how we're being ripped off, and we talk about how we're being screwed, and we talk all these things about how all the American people listen. But look at what we do in our spare time. This is a man and his wife. And this is something that is their business. Now, again, how does stuff got on the internet? And if I find it, I can assure you, yes, I'll download it. And
will you save it?
I'll save it. And
you can probably look at it and everything, get your jollies.
Why don't you shut up? Anyway, like Michelle Ryan, the 47-year-old woman's profile explains, she's a housewife with a master's degree, a Virgo, and once lived in Ellicott City, Maryland, which is where the Ryans lived before they moved to New York. So this is on Deadspin reported that the woman featured in the videos goes by the internet handle I Have Pretty Feet and has more than looks in common with the coach's wife. In one clip, the woman is sitting in a green SUV, ba-ba-ba-ba-boom-ba-boom. The videos are called Awesome Souls and Great Feet Out of Shoes and Hot Mature Sexy Feet. Reporters continued to question, not just hot mature sexy feet. Reporters continued to question him about the videos, asking Ryan if he could confirm that he and his wife had appeared to them. Ryan continued to say, stick it up your can. We got to find out how these things got onto the internet. Ryan described his wife as beautiful. We've been married 23 years. She's awesome. When asked if he was shocked to see the story on the front page of the Daily News, Jets PR man Bruce Spite jumped in and told the media the coach has made his preference clear. It's a personal matter. So the ball club is protecting him. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I don't know how in the hell a man is going. How do you live? Knowing the maturity level of the average football fan. Anyway, which star brought in the biggest box office over the year? Plus, we'll tell you nine things that became obsolete this decade. PhilHendryShow.com, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
You got a website on mature feet?
For all things news and talk radio, visit TRNCentral.com. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back here. PhilHendryShow.com is our website, live streaming video of the show right now. Get a backstage pass and watch as well as listen. Leo DiCaprio, 2010's highest grossing star. We've got all 10. I think we went 2, 3, 4. Yeah, we've got all 10 of 2010's highest grossing stars. We'll get to that in just a moment. And we've got a phone caller in Minneapolis. This is who?
Yeah, Gary Priest, him.
Okay. Hi, Gary. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, hi, Phil. This is Gary Dupree. That's me. And you were going to do the top grossing stars. You were going to do the highest.
Can I ask you, Gary, you in the tub?
Hold on for a minute, Phil. You're going to do the highest grossing stars of 2010. I'm Gary Dupree. That's me, reminding you to read them from 10 to 1, not 1 to 10. Because when you do 1 to 10, it's anticlimactic and so lame, and everyone knows it, too. You would look foolish too, you know.
Yeah, and you're in a bathtub right now, Gary.
I'm Gary Dupree. That's me. What?
You're in a bathtub right now, and you asked for a duck.
No, I didn't ask for a duck, you douchebag. I asked.
Next time that guy calls.
Well, what'd you do?
I didn't do anything, and he ain't gonna call me a douchebag either.
What?
I said he's giving me crap, saying that I'm lame, and he's in a bathtub asking for a duck.
So.
So, and then I said, you're in a bathtub asking for a duck. And he goes, something about I didn't ask for a duck, you douchebag. That's what.
What are you laughing about, man? I'd beat his ass.
I can't beat his ass. He's in Minneapolis.
You got to get some crank callers, man, or closer because, I'd beat on him.
What do you mean we got to get crank callers that are closer? What does that mean?
Yeah, what's that supposed to mean?
What do you mean? What do you think it means? I mean, you got to get a crank caller giving you a hard time. They're closer.
Well, what am I going to do about that, man? Hire them or something? What do you mean?
I'm just saying, we got to get some closer.
How am I going to go out and get crank callers that are closer?
I don't know.
What a jackass question that is.
Yeah.
And you, with this friend of yours.
What? He said it's Gary Dupree. That's him. And he calls up.
Wait, not Gary Dupree. That's him. He says it's Gary Dupree. That's me. And he called up with some. And you know what? He's right. I should read him 10-1.
Exactly.
All right. Leo DiCaprio, 2010's highest grossing star between this year's. Well, why did I read him 10-1? I just said it's Leo DiCaprio.
Well, then you can make number two anticlimactic. Or I mean climate.
Climate. Number 10. Here we go. Jackie Chan made $359 million, the poor bastard. Chan has been starring in movies for almost 30 years, but the new version of The Karate Kid is his highest grossing to date at the global box office, playing an update. Is this money that they made or money that their movies made? Yeah, it's got to be the money their movies made, because no way Leonardo DiCaprio made that kind of jingle. And we'll tell you what it is in just a moment.
Yeah, $1
billion. Why did you?
What did you do that for?
Number 9, Jaden Smith, Will Smith's son, first appeared on the big screen with his dad in the 2006 movie The Pursuit of Happyness. This year, he went solo in an update of The Karate Kid. So there he was. He was in the same movie with Jackie Chan, but and guess what? He made $359 million. Number 8, Sam Worthington, updated version of Clash of the Titans, was so poorly reviewed for its substandard 3D effects that few people realize it was a big hit. The film earned $494 million at the global box office. That means that the American people stayed away from it, but, you know...
Yeah, but the Chinese went and seen it.
Yeah, the Chinese went and seen it. Anyway, the movie earned almost a half a billion worldwide. Kristen Stewart, number 7 on the list, $698 million. Like her co-star, Pattinson, Stewart starred in a non-Twilight film this year. It didn't perform very well, though. The Runaways brought in only $4.7 million. The final Twilight book, Breaking Dawn, has been divided into two films that are both sure to be big earners. The first hits theaters November 2011. Well, what did she make her movies? Oh, she made her money with the Twilight movies.
Yeah.
All right, number 6 on our list of the top 10 money, Robert Pattinson, there he is, $749 million. The Twilight films have been perennial earners, so it's no surprise to see Pattinson on this list. He ranks above his co-star, Kristen Stewart, thanks to Remember Me, a weepy romance that earned a healthy $56 million on an estimated budget of $16. Who was the quarterback for the Steelers?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I thought that was the same guy.
It ain't a guy, it's a girl.
Cordell Stewart.
Was he in that movie?
That's right. Cordell Stewart was in Twilight. No, I just was reminded of his name. All right, so that's number 7. That was number 6. Number 5, Daniel Radcliffe. There he is, $780 million. And what do you think it was for? You got it. Something by those two guys, Ivory and Merchant. No, it was, of course, Harry Potter and it was Deathly Hallows. Radcliffe ranks 5th on our list thanks to one movie, $780 million. Thank you. Number 4, Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man 2 didn't get good reviews, but it did out-earn the first Iron Man movie, bringing in $622 million at the global box office compared with Iron Man's $585 million. Now, why do they give Robert Downey Jr. that movie? Were there other actors in that movie?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know why I'm asking. Not even interested. Johnny Depp and Mia Wasikowska are tied for second, and the number one earner at $1.1 billion is Leonardo DiCaprio. So there you have the... And that doesn't necessarily translate. I don't think that just because they're in the movie, that means that the movie's going to make money. I think they just were lucky enough to be in the movie, don't you?
Uh-uh.
Thank you. Michael Lohan lied to us. Yes, he lied, and I think he should pay. And I'll tell you why, coming up in the Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, liar, man, he lied.
Phil Henry.
Story here about Lindsay Lohan, ostensibly about Lindsay Lohan, but it's really about Michael Lohan. But it's really about the fact that this guy can't shut up for love or money. Michael Lohan is the father of Lindsay Lohan. Now, the story is it's gotten tiring. It's gotten wearying. You may ask, why am I doing it? Because I have to, because people want to hear about it. That's exactly why I'm doing it. But it does have some interest for me this time around. Why? Because Michael Lohan, with his big fat mouth, is going back on something that he promised he would not do, which is to open that yap again of his. He said back in October in a release statement, this was a printed statement, so he showed a little bit of restraint. He did not open his yap and say this. He had it like printed out in a statement. I want to make a public statement that I will not be commenting on anything capitalized relating to my daughter Lindsay or anything capitalized about my ex-wife or sources related to her might say. Okay? That's what he promised. Well, do you think he kept his promise?
Uh-uh.
Dina and Michael Lohan are at war again, and at the center of their latest feud are claims mom told Lindsay not to submit to a breathalyzer test after she clashed with a Betty Ford Center worker. According to the fired staffer's incident report, which she wrote 6 hours after Lindsay allegedly attacked her on December the 12th, Dina told Lindsay that no one had to submit to a breathalyzer test. The worker, Don Holland, says Lindsay repeated this, citing Dina to Holland as the incident grew heated. Dina made the mistake of being overheard telling Lindsay and the other girls not to take a drug test. Michael told Radar Online with his big fat mouth in his exclusive interview. It's enabling, even in rehab. How sad? Are you kidding me? If this was all handled the right way with honesty, none of this would have happened. Because he's never wrong, this Michael Lohan. He is the whole problem with this whole world is his ex-wife and the fact that she's screwing up their daughter. Because he, you know, he's just beautiful. But there's no proof that Dina was overheard. And Lindsay has been quoted as saying she hates her father. Hates him. If there was any maturity and any dignity that these individuals have, I've never seen two people like this, but they have the mental and emotional state of teenagers. It sounds to me like they've never, you know, evolved beyond that. If they had any dignity at all, they'd keep their mouths shut. They'd work this out behind the scenes with their daughter, especially if a daughter of mine or anybody would say they hated their father. Well, you would, what the hell is that about? You know? But this guy, not him, because he knows which side of the bread the butter's on, and he knows who the cash cow is. And I say cash cow with all due respect, but this jackball, he's treating his daughter like that.
Yeah, he wants to be a part of the Lindsay Lohan story one way or another, man.
Yeah, he does. He wants to be a part of the Lindsay Lohan story, even if it kills her.
You think so?
Yes, I think so. I don't think he's bright enough to have thought it out that far, but that's what's going to happen. And to be perfectly honest with you, and I hate to say it, but I can only hope he dies before she does. Which is generally how it's supposed to be with parents and kids, not the other way around. So anyway, after vowing in October to never talk to the media about his daughter again, Lindsay Lohan's father, Michael, spoke briefly with the blog Celebrity 2C Celebrity. You know, here the audio is less than optimal here. Here, listen to this. He's not even talking to any kind of a real... This ain't even the Radar Online guys. Who the hell is Celebrity 2C Celebrity? What is that?
I don't know, some website or something.
Here he is.
Hey, so what's up with Lindsay? I heard you got a fight over there.
Yeah, she defended herself.
Are they going to press charges or...
I don't know what she's going to do, but the lady in the granddaughter is wrong.
Are you going to be spending the holidays with her?
Absolutely.
All right, cool. Thank you. Have a good time.
All right, so...
that's not really an interview.
Oh, yeah, it is. He would have said, no comment. Get out of here. Did you hear that guy?
Hey, so what's up with it? Yeah, that's that Celebrity 2C Celebrity.
Well, you guys got some real winners over there. Hey, what's up with Lindsay? Listen to this.
Hey, so what's up with Lindsay? I heard you got...
What a pro. Here is Michael Lohan. Apparently, he had more to say on his way out of an unidentified building, which, you know, didn't smell too good. No, he just is out of his way at an unidentified building. He again speaks about Lindsay.
Was Lindsay out partying that night?
No, she wasn't. It's all a lie. She did not party. She didn't test positive. Betty Ford's employees should have never gone on camera and lied like that. All she's looking to do is get a payday. And she, what, she's saying that she's on disability because Lindsay took a phone from her wrist? Give me a break.
If you could get one wish for Christmas, what would it be?
I want us to go away.
That you die.
The surge is not working.
How about that? If you... So I won't give any statements, and there he goes on about how, you know, I agree with him on this. Here I am listening to the guy's comments, you know.
Well, you can't help it.
I would agree with him when he says that the woman working there at the Betty Ford Clinic, that woman is beyond belief, because we have another story, and we mentioned this to you, this Don Holland, this woman is all of a sudden, what is it with people anyway, you know? She's given quotes to TMZ. She is. She's got pictures of herself and her injuries shopping them to tabloids. She got $10,000. She won't keep her mouth shut. She works for the Betty Ford Clinic. There are people. Isn't there anything called? Is there not the confidentiality that one observes or one at least one expects from a healthcare provider when it has to do with a patient? Shouldn't the Lohan, or at least this young woman, Lindsay Lohan, shouldn't she expect this from the Betty Ford Clinic? Isn't this a violation of the ethics involved?
Well, if that's a violation of ethics, then who are they going to get that lady or get the clinic?
You get the clinic. You get the Betty Ford Clinic. What are you going to do with her? What are you going to do with this woman? I guess you could tell her, you know, you're out of nursing or whatever it was that she did. But I think you people at the Betty Ford Clinic, I don't know what you're running over there, and I understand that you've had a lot of top-notch drug addicts go through there, and that's, you know, and I don't mean to be a smartass, but why not? Because it is kind of funny. It is. And so, don't you think you want to vet some of these weird asses? What the hell is this about? So that was Michael Lohan as he was talking, coming out of a building, to this guy standing there in an alley with a recorder, and he sounds just about as professional as Bud, man. They could have hired you, Bud.
I would have done it, and there would have been a better, you know, story about it.
Really? Where is that thing, man, about the, that's right, I forgot. I did want to tell you guys about the, here it is. A rehab staffer that accused Lohan of battery is fired talking to TMZ. Dawn Holland, she got canned. Riverside Sheriff's Detective said Tuesday they're investigating the Mean Girl star. That is Lindsay Lohan for alleged altercation with the worker Don Holland. Well, this Holland got fired. Russ Patrick, who's a spokesman for Betty Ford, said the staffer was fired for identifying patients at the center in an interview and disclosing a privileged document. And he's right. Although Betty Ford and the Sheriff Department did not identify the worker, she appeared in an interview on celebrity website TMZ on Tuesday and was promptly fired. She claims the 24-year-old Lohan and two other girls had sneaked out of the facility. You know, obviously the woman, and the guy's right, that Michael Lohan is right, that it is a payday, and that woman took full advantage of it. But still, Michael, with all due respect, I'd rather hear it from anybody other than you and your big fat mouth, if you don't mind. All right, coming up, 9 things that have become obsolete over the last decade. Here it is. Since 2000, we've gained iPods and iPads, Travelocity and Twitter, Facebook and Foursquare, BlackBerry smartphones and Android devices, Xboxes and Wyze, among many other new services, sites, and electronics. We're now poking, we're tweeting, we're Googling, and we're Skyping. But in that time, we've also changed our habits and lost a few things, too. As we look forward to 2011, HuffPost Tech has taken a look back at the things that have become obsolete over the last decade. So this is what, Huff's idea of...
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I mean, if there's anything wrong in there, we can do it again, do it with somebody else.
Well, I don't know, man.
Well, what's she going to get? Just because her name is Huffington, that's not about being a liberal or nothing like that.
All right, fine, but I don't particularly... It ain't about her being a liberal. I just think she's all that clued in when it comes to culture. All right, here are the top 10 things, and I'll start at number 10 so you guys don't flip out on me. Wait a minute, man. Where is it? Where's the other thing, man?
I don't know.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. I have one through four, wherever the hell it is. Oh, here. I have the list, but I don't have... I've got one through three, but I don't have the other way. Here we go. Thanks, Jace. All right. Number 10. Is this down at the very bottom here?
Yeah.
Here is what went the way of the dodo bird, baby, over the last decade. It's all over for handwritten letters. Love letters. Thank you notes. And invitations have gone being handwritten to typed and from the mailbox to the inbox. Sending online messages is a bargain next to the 44-cent stamp. The handwritten letter. In other words, what we call snail mail.
Yeah, snail mail is what they call it.
Exactly. Number 9, the yellow pages and the address book. And that is literal because I just heard somebody say they're going to stop printing the yellow pages. There was a time when you let your fingers do the walking. It meant opening a phone book, not typing in a search query. Phone books, address books, and the yellow pages have been made obsolete. Their information transferred from paper onto smartphones and the web. Number 8, landline phones. While many still rely on landlines, especially in areas where cell phone service is spotty, and that's just about everywhere on Earth. You know, it's true, man, everywhere. There's no, and yet all I have is a cell phone now.
Well, you don't have a landline?
I got a landline. I never use it. Users are increasingly unplugging. As the AP explained, a recent survey found in a first for any age group, more than half of Americans aged 25 to 29 live in households with cell phones, but no traditional landline telephones. All right, so that was 10, 9, 8. Here. Number 7, dial-up internet. Finally. Oh, God, did that suck. It's older and slower than the available alternatives, and it's on its way out. A 2008 study by the Pew Internet and American Life Project found that just 10% of Americans use dial-up. Believe me, that's not by choice. It's because they ain't got no choice. Nobody chooses to use dial-up. Nobody. What was that, number 7? Number 6, classified ads. Not only have ad dollars followed audiences online, but the expansion of Craigslist from one city, San Francisco, to over 500, where you can find a hooker in every... I'm kidding.
You gotta watch that, man.
Anyway, to over 500 has sent chills down the spines of newspaper publishers everywhere, thinning newspapers and reducing sales. If only they'd have been awake when all this stuff was happening. Boy, I'll tell you, have newspapers made the list?
Well, the classified ad.
They should have just put newspapers. I've never seen an industry, and there have been, we have witnessed a variety of industries caught with their pants down around their ankles over the last 10 years. We have seen a lot of industries caught with their, and people want to blame the government, and people want to blame unions. But let me tell you something. If anybody is half awake, you know what's really going on. There's a transition from one way of doing things to another. And this means that people change doing business from one way to another, right? It ain't got nothing with the government or with unions. And if ever, you're going to tell me that the unions are the ones that caused the newspaper business to go on its ass? I don't think so. All right, so in any event, newspapers. Now, the next one up, maps. GPS devices keep getting cheaper, smaller, and more portable. We have GPS in our cars and on our phones. We use mobile maps for everything from cross-country trips to tracking down restaurants, and we employ services like Google Maps and MapQuest to give us customized routes. Asking for directions, carrying around paper maps, and even getting lost are all increasingly obsolete, man.
Yeah, the iPhone, you use that to do the map?
Yeah. What'd you just say, man?
What'd you say?
I said you use an iPhone for the map.
I do. I use it a lot, bud. I use my iPhone. Don't you guys use your droids? You know?
Well, I don't really go all that place, man. I still like going online. I look it up, and then I take it out.
You don't do it on the phone, all right. Next up, VCRs and VHS tapes. Boy, no kidding, those are done. The DVD was invented in 1995. It was introduced in the United States in 1997, and by the early 2000s, had generally overtaken VHS tapes as the video format of choice for consumers. As recently as the late 90s, I remember still using videotape. But in 2005, the Washington Post penned an obituary of sorts for the VHS tape, writing, VHS, the beloved videotape format that bravely won the war against Betamax and charmed millions of Americans by allowing them to enjoy mindless Hollywood entertainment without leaving their home, has died at the age of 29. It passed away peacefully after a long illness caused by chronic technological insignificance and a lack of director's commentary tracks. The president of the Video Software Dealers Association told the Post he thought 2006 would be the last year that there are major releases on VHS, and there won't be many of those. How about that? So VHS was made history. Did you guys have a lot of VHS tapes?
Yeah, I had to throw them all out, man. I couldn't even give them away.
I had a lot of VHS tapes that I had to just crap can. And now we have, and we're going to try to get them on our website, I have family film that we took from 8mm, Brownie 8mm film that we put onto VHS. Now my sister has taken that and she's having it put onto DVD. But I don't know what kind of quality we're losing.
You still got the film?
I still have the film. Does anybody have a projector? You know, I still do have the film. The next most obsolete thing, and this is number 2 on the list, travel agents. The proliferation of sites like Kayak, Orbitz, Travelocity, and Priceline, which have empowered consumers to find their own fares and easily book their own flights, together with the rise of websites and apps that give travelers the information they need to plan their own itineraries, they've changed the travel industry in drastic ways. The days of recruiting a travel agent to book flights, find hotels, and organize tours are on their way out. And finally, what do you think the number one casualty of the last decade was?
Can I look?
No, you can't look. Because if you look, I know you're going to say something. What do you think the number one casualty of the decade was? Bookstores.
Bookstores.
What?
Yeah. The last decade has brought bad news for bookstore browsing bookworms. The rise of online retailers like Amazon, which offers bargain basement prices on books, including that pederast book where you can get, anyway, like Amazon, which offers the bargain basement prices on books and other items, and the increasing popularity of e-books has put pressure on bookstores and put many of them out of business. Publishing industry insider Mike Crapcan. What's that guy's name?
I look like Mike.
Well, I better not say.
No, you better not say. S-H-A-T-Z-K-I-N. Shatskin.
You get in trouble.
No, I ain't going to get in trouble. Anyway, he predicts what brick-and-mortar booksellers will experience in the first 6 months of 2011 will be the most difficult time they've ever seen. Well, thank you so much, Mike. He's a publishing industry insider. There it is, man. The top 10 things that were made obsolete over the last 10 years. And the number one thing, bookstores. Gone. I still like to go to them, though. I don't know. World famous Phil Hendry Show. And we'll be back with the conclusion of our program here. Spider-Man continues to take heat. They've canceled one performance, but I think they'll bring it back. We'll be back here on the Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Man, what do you think of this thing?
I want to see a guy fall.
You want to see? What do you think?
Well, I thought, if they're gonna sell it, man, you might want to go see it. See the whole, like, the ceiling collapse.
Yeah, but they ain't gonna sell it like they're not. They're gonna pitch it like that. They're not gonna pay. Hey, come see Spider-Man, and maybe the ceiling will collapse.
But that's the only way you're gonna get me to see it.
Yeah, this sounds pretty boring to me.
Boring?
What's a play? Is it not a movie, or what is it?
It's a play, man. It's a play.
I'm not going to see that.
So you think that plays are boring?
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, man, when I went and saw O, I guess the closest thing I've seen to this Spider-Man was O, was the Cirque du Soleil's O.
What is O?
Yeah.
That was the name of it, O, okay? And, boy, I'll tell you what. That is an amazing feat. When you're talking about a really physically demanding performance where you've got lots and lots of props and you have in Cirque du Soleil, these people are all acrobats and they're all gymnasts and they're all stunt people. And even the main characters, the main actors, which I can't really say when I saw, I don't know about the rest of Cirque du Soleil. They've got some actors, they've got clowns and they have people that are great in that kind of performance. But everybody that you see is generally doing something physical. Like in this play, it's about some, I don't know what it's about. I can tell you what it's about. It's about some old wrinkled up guy who brings a doll to life and it makes him younger.
Yeah.
Well, you guys look really interested.
Well, how am I supposed to know?
All I'm going to tell you is they got huge props and the actors are swinging through the air and they've got guys diving. I'm telling you, dudes are diving from like 20 feet up into pools of water. So they had a stage built. The Cirque du Soleil has their own theater in Las Vegas and they had their own stage built. So they know exactly what they're dealing with. And I went and saw this. It went off flawlessly. It was fantastic. But I think you got to know what you're doing, man,
Well, yeah, those guys, they do it every night and everything.
Exactly. The people that do that Cirque du Soleil, those cats are into that stuff. Man, they had guys that were hanging from the rafters, swinging back and forth. It was nuts. Now you're going to try and put this thing on Broadway, and it's goofy. Oh, God, I forgot. You know what? I don't have any time to read the story now. Spider-Man, well, let me just put it to you this way. Spider-Man is going to have one more performance. Then they're going to, well, no, Spider-Man's going dark. Then they're going to come back, and hopefully they're going to do it right. The Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rance. Technical director is Charles Wagon. Our associate producer is Dan Northcraft. Sorry.
What about it?
Go see Spider-Man, and maybe the ceiling will collapse. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.